Now I'm delighted to say that I'm joined in studio by Paul Rouse, and he's written a new book, Sport in Modern Irish Life. And when I think of you, Paul Rouse, I think of you as many different things: a historian, a football coach, a sports fan. You are a lot of things, all a father, all rolled into one. And I feel like a lot of what you're about is reflected in this book, and a lot of your thoughts and how you feel about sport is right here in these pages. What was the premise of this book?
The premise of the book, thanks a million for having me in, first of all, Marie, but the premise of the book was to have a bit of fun towards the end of lockdown, when I thought, I got a great privilege to work for the Irish Examiner writing columns for them, and I thought I'd pull some of them together and then write other stuff around it, use that as a starting point, and then go on. And I thought, I'm actually just going to do I'm going to do something enjoyable. I write a lot of history books. I teach a lot of history, and I thought I'm going to do something contemporary. So there's a bit of history in there, but it's not really history. It's mainly about the sporting world around us, and from a very personal thing. You could say it's kind of an exercise in self-indulgence, because I wrote it with myself in mind. I just wrote it as I wanted to write it, and didn't worry about if anyone was going to publish it, or if people were. I didn't write it even with any other reader in mind. I just wrote it because I just had fun doing it.
Well, that's brilliant. And you got Merrion Press, isn't it,
Merrion Press.
Come on board.
I was delighted, and just delighted that they were interested in it. And so there it is.
It's a fascinating read, because it does, as you said, capture the history. But also, I found it started to make me think about things, and think about the way that Irish society looks on sport, and also how much it means to people. And even the little things like how people become good at sport, why they become good at sport, whether or not being good at sport or being an elite should take the precedence that it does. But I guess, being from Clare myself, and a bit like you kind of relate to certain parts of it, I was really interested in the whole geography side of it, and how where you're born shapes almost what you're, it's definitely shaped what I'm interested in, and the sports that I got to play.
Yeah, it's I think, first of all, there are people who love sport, and they have an entry point to it, and the entry point often depends on geography or family or the school you're from or whatever you're doing. And for you, I suppose, for Clare, it's football or hurling, and it would have been
East
the same.
Clare.
So, but where I was in Offaly, even though Offaly were winning All-Irelands in hurling at the time, it was mainly football around where I grew up. Now, hurling pushed in afterwards. But if you get a love of sport and you push into that, and I'm one of four boys who grew up in a house all very close together in age, and we played everything. We didn't need to be in a club to play stuff, so we played amongst ourselves tennis and rugby and soccer with all the neighbours coming in from fields around us, and playing games with O'Briens and Lynches and Clavins and so on every night, it seems, in my memory. Of course, memory does strange things to you, but depending on the season, it was tennis or rugby or soccer. And it was cricket, because there was a cricket club down the road from us, hidden in a backfield, and we used to break into the cricket club and take out the bats and balls and play when there was nobody else around. It was just to do something different.
You write about the dream, and everybody, I think, that plays sport has a dream of some sort. Tell us a little bit about your feelings on that dream.
Oh, my dream would have been to play for Offaly, football, play Gaelic football for Offaly. I was 12 when Offaly won the All-Ireland in 82, and I thought that this was, the future would roll out in front of me, that I love football, and I really would have liked to play football for Offaly. As it turned out, I did play for Offaly once. As my offer, they always do, I play for Offaly, but it would only be once.
Should I have said former Offaly footballer?
No, you shouldn't have. It was a challenge match. It was a challenge match against Mayo. When I made the panel, when I never made a minor team or an under 21, and I made the Offaly panel when I was 29, just about turning 30. And I was too late. I wasn't good enough, just to be clear on that. But I got in for the last challenge match against Mayo, and I touched the ball. I was being marked by Ken Mortimer, who was a brilliant footballer, and he had way too much for me. And if we include the one that hit where the ball hit me in the face, I touched, and the two frees I touched the ball four times. It was quite a chastening experience. So I think I was a decent club footballer, but not good enough to play county football. So that would have been a dream very, very partially realised. And you look at it tonight, like you were just talking to Adrian there, and I see the women's soccer team around UCD at the moment, and there's dreams there about to be broken.
Yeah.
Of people who are not going to make a final squad, and that's cruel. That's a, there's a cruelty in sports. So you chase the dream, and it's a wonderful thing to do. It gives a brilliant impetus to sport, but the downside of it is there's dreams realised and dreams fulfilled, which is brilliant. Although they don't always end up, when they're fulfilled, being quite as satisfying as you think they might be. And then there's dreams that are destroyed or denied, and it can colour a life.
And like, just to even bring that a little bit further, when I was listening to you there, like when I was a kid and I was lucky enough to play a lot of sport and be encouraged to play sport, and I had four sisters and I have two brothers, but my dad used to drive us from Six Mile Bridge to Ennis, the girls, to play soccer because that was our nearest soccer club. And we were all good soccer players. I never had a dream of playing soccer because I never saw anybody play soccer. I never had a dream of playing Gaelic football, or the only little thing that I thought maybe I could do was go and be an athlete because I was able to see the Olympics. But I had no aspirations to do anything like that because I couldn't see it.
And I think that's the great change in the last, we'll say 20 years in particular, I'll even say 15 years in particular, is the growth of, like, look, it comes down to the basic fact, like, men walked on the moon before women played football in Croke Park in Daly Mount.
Okay, that's a great line.
Like, or in Lansdowne Road. That's a basic fact.
Yeah.
And that's really, that the legacy of that isn't gone, by the way. It's still there, and it will be there for a considerable time to come. There's no denying that. But at the same time, I've trained a girls' Gaelic football team. I've just taken them to minor from under 16. So I've done 12 years with them, brought them the whole way through from the nursery to overage, and to adult level. They're now gone into adult or going into adult football, and it's been a brilliant experience. And I was actually reading. I'm reading Emma Ryan's book at the moment, and I really, really wish I'd read that book. And I know I shouldn't be plugging someone else's book when I'm on, supposed to be plugging my own. Grass Arena. And it's just a brilliant book. And I wished I'd read it before I trained a girls' team. It would have saved me, it would have given me an awful lot of shortcuts and a much greater insight into what, because I trained the girls always to the standard that I would apply to a boys' team, which I think is the right way to do it. But I could have come at it from a different angle.
Yeah.
And
I guess everyone's learning, I think, when it comes to women's
slowly
sport.
Slowly, in my case. But,
but still, at least you've an awareness now to figure it out. But yeah, that's an interesting... I would think that so many women and girls now have dreams, but most were like me, where they couldn't see anything, so they had no idea that there would be any opportunities to go on, which is pretty sad, really.
I do think, I think even though I'm one of four brothers, no sisters, I grew up in a house in which my mother played sport and still plays sports, and like played camogie, played tennis and golf and played anything and was interested in all sports. Yeah. So I think that probably helped.
Yeah, I think so as well. You tackle the dark side of sport as well, and there is unfortunately lots of elements of that. But when it comes to like cheating, doping, professional fouls, and like we're talking about the discrimination there against women, you explore all of that.
Well, we like to think that sport is something that's inherently good, and of course it's not. Sport is a reflection of society with all the ills, and the darkness of society is inevitably recast in sports. It does an awful lot for people, it brings an awful lot to people's lives, but that doesn't mean it's without blemish. And we should talk about the blemishes of sport just as we should talk about the blemishes of everything in society. And you can't hide the fact of, even for example, like violence in a match or within matches, and kind of cowardly violence as well. I'm not talking about physicality, I'm talking about the sneaky box or something like that. We should call it out for what it is.
Why don't we like talking about it? Like, we don't mind talking about something that we'll see on the street, or we don't mind talking about other elements of society that might be, or of our culture that might be uncomfortable, but we tend to look at sport through a sort of a rose-tinted glasses.
I think it's also we look at it through a very partial thing. So someone, a Cork footballer, hits somebody a box, no one from Cork comes out and says, this is shocking. Instead, it's, oh, why don't you call it out against everybody else and not against us?
And we play the sports off each other.
We play the sports off each other. Exactly. So it becomes unbelievably tribal very, very quickly. And we're all at fault for it, by the way. Far from blameless, myself and all of that. And we're willing to point the finger at somebody else. But...
yeah, they did it worse.
They did it worse. They did it worse. So we were only protecting ourselves. We were only responding. And anybody who I know who has played sport has done something stupid at some stage or another, or something that they regret, or at least most people have.
So when you think of your like all the different sports, and you can tell how much of a fan you are from this, and it's like, it's interesting, you're a fan of loads of different sports. Like, you're not just, you know, not just GAA, it's soccer, it's the minority sports, it's everything. And when you look at all of them, is there something that stands out, a memory, a moment, that when you think of your favourite recollection of sport, what is it?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
And I think the thing about it is that if you asked me that question tomorrow, I'd give you a different answer than I'd give you now. But what has come straight into my head is the final whistle in the 2000 county final in Offaly, after 12 years of failures in finals and semi-finals with Tullamore, we got over the line with a group of us who had failed fairly spectacularly together for quite a while. And it's not even the game, it was the final whistle in that, the sheer relief. It wasn't even, it became joy later, afterwards, but it was the sheer relief in actually doing something that we'd spent so long trying to do. So that's what's in my head at the moment. But if you ask me that, even
the
in
the time
an hour,
of the year, whatever it is, are we changed in our attitudes to sport? Like, have Irish people? Is there any difference in the way we relate to sport, the way we our passion for it?
Sport changes all the time. So 20 years ago, rugby was nowhere near as popular as it is now, and look at the place that rugby has now in the everyday life, the number of people, and it's to do with professionalisation and the change in the nature of rugby itself. Look, I was actually thinking, I was on Dollymount Strand recently trying to run very slowly, and there were people out kite surfing. There was no kite surfing in Ireland 15, 16 years ago. So sport changes, and what people do with sport changes all the time. And there is no doubt, we kind of think that the sporting world we're in the moment will stay that way forever. So there will always be a 32 county GAA competing against each other and all of that. But it won't be like that forever, because if nobody who sat in the Colosseum in Rome thought there will ever be weeds growing out of a crumbling structure which was left to ruin for a millennium. So everything will change, and everything around us will change and is changing all the time.
Well, one thing that'll never change is we'll always need books on sport. So there'll be plenty of work for you, I'd say, over the years writing about sport. Paul, this is a brilliant one, Sport in Modern Irish Life. Have you any plans for any more?
I don't. I'm happy now. I'm really fortunate. I've got a really good job in UCD, and I love teaching. I teach sport over there, sports history,
as well as Irish
history, and it's a real joy to do that. So I'm going to really focus on that for the next couple of years and see where that brings me.
Brilliant, Paul. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
My dad's actually
a
history teacher, and he used to often bring in Eamon Sweeney's columns and get the students to read them and try and bring the sport history into it as well, and it really engaged them, he thought. So there's a great connection there.
I think it's one of the lessons of teaching. If you teach someone something that they're interested in, they'll improve at it because they'll spend more time in it. And the worst thing is trying to teach somebody who's not interested in something.
We're going to talk to Jeff Shepherd now about American sports. He's standing by. But even from that perspective, you must see a huge increase in Irish people being interested in what's happening stateside.
If you look at the great change in modern world is the globalization of American sports. So every empire has pushed its sports everywhere. Look at the cricket and rugby and all of that coming from England when the English empire was dominant. Look at now the spread of basketball with hip hop music and American popular culture, the NFL, the NBA, NBL, all of those. And what makes it possible more than anything else is the app that you get on your phone where you can pay. You buy you can buy access to every NFL match for 170 euros now and support a team. And that's number one. And number two, the dominant leisure wear now in the world is sporting. And American sports leisure wear is probably the most popular of them all.
Yeah, lots of really clever people have managed to make that happen. One of them is standing by. Jeff Shepherd is on the line all the way from the United States. How are you, Shep?
I'm great, Marie. How are y'all doing today?
Great, actually. Yeah, really, really good. I had a brilliant chat there with Paul Rice about his book, Sport in Modern Irish Life, and he gave us a bit of insight into the globalisation of American sports. And I guess, you know, one that always sticks out is basketball and the rise in that. And tonight you have the NBA draft.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, Marie, that's a topic, you know, we've tackled on this show for like a decade now. You know, we're ahead of the curve, you know.
Absolutely.
But, but look, to the point y'all are you discussing, the number one player in the draft that's going to get picked tonight is a Frenchman, you know. Victor Wembanyama. So, you know, it also helps that he's 7'3", you know. So that's, you know, probably, you know, conducive to being a good basketball player. But yeah, it looks like he's going to be, you know, kind of the consensus number one overall pick and to go to the San Antonio Spurs. And when you kind of look back at the last, you know, 25 years kind of ballpark, maybe even 30 with the Spurs, you go from David Robinson, a 7-footer who played at the Naval Academy here in America. And then, you know, they also drafted Tim Duncan a couple of years later. He played at Wake Forest, but was, you know, from down in the Virgin Islands, I believe. So he was a little bit, you know, not on the U.S. mainland. And now you come to Victor Wembanyama, and, you know, we've seen an unbelievable amount of European basketball players have success. Most notably recently, you know, Nikola Jokic winning the title just a couple of weeks ago, and obviously Luka Doncic. So, yes, I mean, you know, basketball, very similarly to soccer, you know, as you guys call it, football, you know, all you pretty much need is a ball and, you know, something to fashion into a basket and you can go play. And yeah. So, I mean, and the NBA has kind of really capitalized on it. And yes, to the point Paul just made, the spread of hip hop music and that culture and the clothing and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, it really is the biggest global game. And that's certainly something we've touched on here many times over the last couple of years.
And soccer isn't too far behind either. And when you see the likes of Messi heading to the MLS, I'm sure it's going to get more attention. But it was interesting to hear Gareth Bale saying today that he thinks that Messi's going to really enjoy it because there's no consequences to losing.
Yes, which is really another theme that you and I have hit on over the years, whether it was Beckham or, you know, some of the other players that have come over here, Gareth Bale included. You know, the point he was trying to make was it's not life or death like it is in the year, you know, in La Liga or Serie A or, you know, the English Premier League. Now, when you get to the NFL or you get to, you know, college football, especially down here where I am in the South in the SEC, yes, week to week, it is life or death. I mean, you know, you've got rivalries and different things like that. But, you know, when it comes to the MLS, Messi's going to be cashing large checks, playing in front of large crowds, and have no real expectations. And so that's kind of what he signed up for the next couple of years. That doesn't sound like a terrible retirement, if you ask me.
Absolutely not. It's a bit like you when you come onto this show, Shep. Thank you so much.
The checks are nice. They're not huge, though. I'll say that.
A little bit of catching up to do. Yeah.
That's right.
Shep, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. That is all we have time for this evening. Betty De Silva is up next. RTE 2FM.